And I got out, I come running back to you. I come running back to you. Yeah, I come running back to you.
Welcome to the Wayne Bennett Podcast, celebrating West Virginia's people, places, and the culture of Southern Appalachia. Now here's your host, Wayne Bennett.
Welcome to Wayne Bennett's podcast. This is September the 5th, 2023, episode 112. Today, my guest is Dan Red Brock. And first of all, how'd you get the nickname Red?
Along about 15, my hair was red, and they just started calling me Red because of my hair.
Was it your parents that started calling you that?
No, not my parents, no. Just people I knew and my friends and whatever, and it growed.
Tell me a little bit about your parents. Tell me about your mom and dad.
Broken family, completely. Uh-huh. I was just about half of an orphan, you know. My dad left me when I was 7 years old and went to Maryland.
Uh-huh.
Worked up there. My mother, she done all she could do with me down at a little town called Whiteville. Down there next, it's halfway between Beckley and Charleston, you know, little coal town.
Uh-huh.
You know. And she tried to keep she kept a roof on my head, but that a bed to sleep in, but, you know, whatever. And you know, she done the best she could do it in alcohol, really what put my home on.
Yeah.
Now, Dad worked. He got his leg cut off when he was 9 years old. He lived in Tennessee, and he stepped on a cradle. Split his heel, from the story was, and it set up gangrene, and they cut his leg off right below his knee.
Wow.
And he made his own legs and everything. And he could walk limp, just a little bit of a limp at all. You never know about it, you know. And alcohol.
What was your mom's maiden name?
Barnard. She was from Stuart, Virginia.
Uh-huh.
Blue Ridge Mountains up on a hill. Yeah.
And where'd you go to school when you were first growing up?
Whiteville Grade School. Whiteville. We lived in a little coal camp called Red Dragon or Blue Pennant or whatever right there at Whiteville.
Uh-huh.
That's where. And had a hard time going to school.
How far did you go?
Well, I went to the eighth grade. I finally made it to the eighth grade. Yeah. But so much trauma going on in my house and everything, I didn't want to go to school.
Yeah.
I was all the time saying they're going to leave me and all that kind of stuff. You get me worried to death all the time.
So if you quit school in the eighth grade, you had to go to work then, didn't you?
Oh, I went to school in 2 weeks before I was 16.
And what was your first job?
Cooper's Esso on Harper Road. That was before they turned it to Exxon. I was staying with my uncle. Now, he probably helped me more than anything on the farm. He come down there at Whiteville and got me off of the streets and took me to his farm. And it tickled me to death. I loved the farm. And
where was the farm located?
Cove Creek, right there at Arnott.
Okay.
Yeah. And He done, you know, he helped me a whole lot. Whenever, 2 weeks before I was 16, I thumbed to Beckley and hunted me a job. And I went in at Cooper's Esso. I went in there to get a job, and he said, "You know, I ain't got nobody for me." And I said, "Okay." So I walked in town quite a bit, but I was making sure that I knew how to get back out of town, you know, because I didn't know about it. And I come back out of there, I stopped again. I said, "I ain't got no job." He said, "Boy, how old are you?" I said, "I'm 16. He said, "You're lying to me. You're not 16. I said, just like it was, I can remember that like yesterday. I said, "2 weeks I'm 16 and I've already quit school." And he said, "Where are you going to stay?" I said, "Anywhere. I can work." So there's a little cot and a little high in the back of the service station there. We could, you know, take a bath or whatever. And he said, I tell you, he said, I think I'm going to give you a job. He said, you go home, get you some clothes, come on back. You can stay back here in the back. I'd work from 7 in the morning till 10 at night. That was when the station was open, and that's what I worked. And I learned to grease cars and wash cars, you know, just regular service station work. And he told me, he said, now, boy, if you steal off of me, he said, I'll kill you. Well, I never run the register at that time. I just done everything else, you know.
It was full service back then.
Oh, yeah, absolutely full service, yeah.
Yeah.
And I learned to grease cars and to change oil and stuff like that. And I worked there for probably about, I'm going to say, 6 or 8 months there. And mother come to Becky and she said, well, she said, if I go over here, someone get us a house and I go to work up here, would you live with me? And I said, yes. So she found a little two-room house over right across the road from Green Bank Motel, Ryan Lilly's place. And I went to work for him. And
Ryan's Texaco.
Huh?
Ryan's Texaco.
Yeah, Texaco. That's what it was. Lily's Texaco, they call it. Lily's Texaco. Mm-hmm. I spent about, I'm on safe in saying 3 years, but it might not have been that, but I think it was. And a buddy of mine had quit working out there at Industrial Brake Company, which that was where we done a lot of brake work for shovels and dozers and stuff like that, you know, back in them days. And I got a job there for.
We're talking the early 1950s.
Oh, yeah. Early 1950s.
Yeah.
And I worked there in the shop, you know, for probably a year or more. And Carlos McMillan, he was my boss from out here at Piney View. And he put me on the road, selling brake lining. You know, going, and I'd go to Nashville, Tennessee 1 week, and I'd go to Chattanooga the next week. And I'd drive over 1,000 miles a week, you know, with a pickup, selling brake lining and picking brake bands up and stuff, you know. And, of course, I didn't drink anything. You know, that's one thing that he wouldn't allow me to do. He said, if I put you on the road, you can't drink, you know.
Yeah.
And done pretty good for myself, you know. I tried hard. I didn't have nothing else to do but try. So I worked there, and then my brother-in-law, he went to work in Eccles and shaft department, and he was working there. He got me a job working for Eastern Gas and Fuel. And I went to Granttown, West Virginia, and got me a job, you know, and went to Ebensburg, Pennsylvania, went to work in the mines, okay. Shaft department. Mm-hmm.
You didn't have no time to recreate or play around too much, did you?
No. I played around a little bit. And I finally got me a car. I was working at Rhymes when I got my first car.
Uh-huh.
36 Chevrolet. You know, never have been out of a car since then. But, no, I didn't have much time because I drove a company truck, you know, and I'd leave the house on Monday morning, come back on Thursday, you know, and then I'd have a couple of nights, you know, I'd run around a little bit.
What was the first car you ever owned?
36 model Chevrolet.
36 model Chevrolet.
Yeah.
Had a six.
You couldn't tear that car up.
Now, somewhere along the line, back during that time, you were still a youth during World War II and then the Korean War. You're still a little bit young. But somewhere along the line, selective service, did you ever get?
If I'd had somebody to talk to me, I probably went in service. But I didn't have nobody to talk to me. Everybody I talked to, all they thought was getting out there getting shot at.
You
know,
yeah.
That's about what they thought. That's the impression that I got. I wish I would have went in service. And I got married in 1956 and I'm still working for Industrial Brake Company some and then started working in the mines. I went to work in the mines in 1957. And
Doug Stanley was your best man, wasn't he?
Oh, he was best. He was my best man. See, me and Doug worked the service station together, Eric Ryan. See,
uh-huh.
Doug, yes, see, that's where I met Don. Dunn. See, Reverend Stanley was the one that married us.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I got married.
We had David Stanley on here a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Brothers. I ran into him. Yeah.
Doug was a character.
Yeah, he was. Yes, he was. I don't know how I ever went through his life without getting in trouble myself. And he stayed in trouble. you know, Doug did, fighting and whatever.
But
he was my best friend at the marriage and everything. In 57, we had our first kid, Pamela. She's 66 now. Then I wanted to go to work in the mines. I wanted to make more money. Went to Granttown, West Virginia, and got signed up. And went to Ebensburg, Pennsylvania, and went to work up there. Me and Albert went together. I worked in the shafts, what we were doing at that time. We wasn't in the mine of coal. We were construction work in the shafts, you know, building the shafts and everything. And I done that. And then you're talking about selective service. They called me in Korean War.
Uh-huh.
Well, yeah. And I was expecting to go to war. And I went up there, and he said, Red said, you better go up there and talk to him. So I did. And I went there and talked to that guy and told him, I said, what do I have to do now to get started? And the first thing he asked me, he said, are you married? And I said, yes. Why didn't you put it on? Why didn't you let us know you was married? I said, I didn't think I had to let you know I was married. I thought I had to let you know where I was at. Of course, I was dumb. You know, I didn't know hardly how to talk to anybody. He said, is she pregnant? I said, yeah. And when he said that, he just reached over at that stamp and put down there and rejected. And he wouldn't take me. That was about when the Korean War was pretty well finished. I don't know if it was finished or not, but that was Truman. And he just wasn't taking nobody that was married and nobody was had any kids at that time. And yeah. I missed out. And really, I'd have liked to have went. You know, I believe I'd have liked to have went.
Now, when you started in the mines, all the mines were union back then, weren't they?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Did y'all work every day?
Oh, yeah.
Did you?
Yeah. We worked, whenever I went to work, boss was over at the shaft department. He called me in there in the office and he says, hey, boy, he said, we work 5 and 6 days a week, and we expect you to be here when we need you. I said, yes, sir. And we did. We worked 5 and 6 days a week. Yeah.
Now, they drilling, had a lot of
drilling and shooting, you know, jackhammering. Trina can't hear today.
Well, I was going to ask you what kind of jobs you had in the mines.
Oh, drilling, construction work, you know, drilling and shooting, you know. And then I got to be a FAR boss for a while. And I took the examination and made the, you know, superintendent, you know, get. And just started moving up, you know. If something needed to be done in the mines, you know, I'd go in. Mm-hmm. Most time I was outside sometimes it wasn't. And Beckley too, Sabine, I helped build that. I was one of the engineers on that job. Sure. Didn't know I wasn't an engineer at all, but I was classified as one because I was looking after most of the stuff. Shafts and slopes, you know, and I had the chief engineer done most of the work on the building, but I'd done the shafts and slopes and stuff.
During that time, there was a lot of punch mines around. People still use house coal and stuff and these guys, but the federal government came through and started passing laws that punch mines were illegal. And I remember a preacher lived in front of us, Billy Waddell. He had a punch mines over around Gray Flats,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, yeah.
And they worked ponies and did that up until the late 50s.
The sewer seam here in Beckley, that's a sewer seam. That's doing over Beckley. That was one of the best byproduct coals in the country for making steel. That's the reason it was such a work a lot of people. Was on account of that, you know. And that's them guys that go out there at Gray Flats and get a mine, they'd sell house coal. So it's good coal to burn, whatever, yeah. People made a good living.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a guy by the name of Ari Sapp. I don't know whether you ever heard of him or not. He lived over on LaRue Avenue. He had a mine down there. He worked 2 or 3. He worked for Doug. Doug worked for Ari a whole lot, you know.
Yeah.
Punch mine.
You ended up working at Ranger Fuel
Ranger Fuel was, I went to work for Facilio and Grogan on the shaft department. That's how I come in to get the job. And I done a little shaft down there at right just out of Mullins and done a job there at East Gulf. at that time, I was working for Cecilio Grogan on the shaft job. You know, I'd done left Eastern at that time. And then after we finished that job there at East Gulf, I believe I am, well, I went to, they transferred me to Ranger Fuel, Beardsville. I just got started. Beardsville, we just got started at mine down there, and they transferred me down there at Ranger Fuel. And that was in 60 or 61, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you wrote, a lot of your responsibilities was the construction part.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
And
I mm-hmm. See, my title, when I retired, my title was Construction Reclamation Superintendent. Uh-huh. That was my title.
So you never got black lung or anything like that?
I got black lung, yeah.
You did? Some,
yeah. I got a little bit from a state. And if I could probably get black lung today, you know. But when I got married. Now, I was wild when I was four before I got married. But when I got married, I got married. You know what I mean? That was my wife. And we raised four kids. And I was married to her 49 years. And she decided that she didn't want to be married to me no longer. And that's the reason that I didn't do anything about black lung. Because when I had to get a divorce, I made up my mind, and it was in a divorce, that if I got black lung, she got half of it.
So you decided what you were going to do to participate in that. During the time that you was working, how many years did you work around in the mines?
45.
45 years. Now, you were a member of the union. There had to have been a few strikes during that time.
Mm-hmm.
And do you remember the longest one or the one that you had did you witness any trouble or anything like that during strikes? Or
I never was in but one strike. I was lucky. You know, we scabbed a lot. They moved back in the woods where they couldn't find us. And we'd work. Uh-huh. But no, I never, if they pulled a picket line, we'd leave, you know, as far as that's concerned. Yes, we'd honor the lines, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But if there's a chance to work, we would too, you know. But, and I was too much company not to do it, you know. I leaned toward the company a lot. I really did.
Yeah. You know? My dad was,
Lord, I know him.
He worked, at Slab Fork, and he ended up being a company man, you know, and he thought the world of the Capertons and the family, you know, and running Slab Fork. And but you got to, especially during those times, you have to honor a picket line, and it's kind of kind of tough. But what kind of changes over the years did you see in the mining business? I know in the 50s it was a lot different than it was in the 70s as far as technology or whatever. Mm-hmm. What were some of the big things that you can remember about?
The best things or what kind?
Yeah.
I don't know. See, we used to have DC power, you know, was underground, and before AC power went in. You know, and that was when you had this gathering, like a joy. You had gathering arms on it, like that right there. You know, to gather it up and put it, you know, in the line or whatever. And run the buggy. And if we was, just like in Granttown, we were doing some construction work up there, you know, and leveling it off. That's when they put a new tipple and everything in up there. I run a buggy underground. You know, all in on supplies and whatever that I need to do. Yeah. But now I was never completely under production, you know, when it come to mining coal at the face.
Uh-huh.
You know, I was always back doing land track or doing dead work, what you call it, you know, in the mines. I run a crew doing that. I was kind of crew leader on it. When I was really young, I don't know what it is about life, but seemed like when I first started, if there's three men out there, I was the one that they looked for. You know, I was pushing myself into being a boss. I guess you want to call
it. Some of us guys, some don't.
I would, you know, and that's how come he'd go to Boston. You know, I went to Boston, and 67 on the strip. I'd run a work, you know, I'd run the strip job in. And I worked with Ranger Fuel on the strip. You know, I went to Boston in 67. I bossed until I retired.
What year did you retire?
94.
So you was on the strip job quite a while, wasn't you?
Stripping, yeah. Oh, yeah, we...
Yeah. When y'all was... the mines that you worked in around the deep mines, was it low coal, high coal, gas? I mean, what...
You mean underground?
Yeah.
Around 40 inches, 37 inches, 40 inches, you know. That's about to, you know... some of it was 5 foot, you know, according where you, which mines it was and steam coal, you know.
Yeah, I've heard some of these guys in the bars talk about low coal,
oh,
and
yeah,
32 inches well, and stuff, and I don't, man, that's hard to
now,
imagine.
I never worked in them, but Clanksville was the one that bought Ranger Fuel out down there in Virginia, Carbo. I was down there later, you know, during that big strike I was down there and everything, and I knew about that seam of coal. They had high seam of coal down there. They had some of it 8-10 foot high.
Oh, wow.
Today's world, I would rather work in 30 inches of coal than I would 8 foot. A lot easier work. You know, you're laying there on your side shoveling and stuff, but it wasn't, I mean, it was work and it was hard work, but it wasn't nothing like carrying timbers and stuff. And trying to hold that much of a roof up.
Yeah.
Now, to me, I'd rather work in about 5 foot of coal.
Yeah. I ended up living on. You had your own farm.
Oh yeah, there. I did. Yeah. I bought 85 acres down there at Cove Creek, down there where I was Uncle George down there in that country. Yeah. And I had a few head of cattle, and but it was mountain. But it was. Matter of fact, I cry every day for selling my farm. I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved it, Morton. And I was involved with Jim Campbell, which he had 300 acres in Lewisburg, up in there. And I was involved with some cattle up there, you know. I like cattle. I like full of cattle.
Yeah.
Now, I would today if I could.
Did you grow anything or just have cattle?
Just cattle, no.
Yeah.
Forest, no. Not corn or nothing, no.
When did you sell your farm?
During problems with the family and everything when I had that store down there. You see, I had that store down there, and I made money a few years down there, and then...
Are you talking about store at Stanford?
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about that just a second. You was living on the farm, and you built the store?
No, I wasn't living on the farm. I was living out here.
Oh, you moved the landlord.
But I had a farm down there. Yeah.
Moved the landlord.
Yeah. I'd go down there every day.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And... you had the store on Raglan Road,
uh-huh.
And you had that about 3 or 4 years? Is that how long you had it?
I believe it was 9 years.
Really? And it burned down, didn't it?
Yeah, Danny, yeah. But I didn't give it to him. I didn't give it to my family.
Uh-huh.
I had done had all I could have. Uh-huh. they thought money growed on a tree. They just said, well, we got a service station and a big book. I don't need nothing. You know? Oh, yeah. She's a good woman. She's good to me. She raised my kids.
Now, you had two boys and two girls?
Two boys and two girls, yeah.
Yeah.
But I was working in the mines and working all the time. Let her raise the family, what you might say. I'd see them when, you know, and it just getting back to the store, how can we do it? I couldn't control nothing. They just overtook me, and it really hurt me. So I went home that day, and I said, Roberta, you can have that store. I don't want nothing else to do with it. Well, it was in her name. I put it in her name anyway to help her with her Social Security and whatever. And I said, I don't want nothing about it. I said, leave everything like it is. You have it. I'm leaving. And I told her why. And she said, well, maybe no, give it to her. I'm going to give it to him. You and him can run it. So that's when I give him that store. I give him a pile of money. But I was done, had all I can take.
Now, you had one of your daughters, I know, was a musician, played piano and stuff. And then you have a couple grandsons that's pretty musically inclined. Did you ever play anything, any instruments or anything?
No, but my, you know, Pamela, she was in a band. She come to me one day when she's a little old girl, and she said, Daddy, would you buy me a piano? And I told her, I said, I'll tell you what I'll do. I said, you play me one song on piano and I'll get you a piano. So that was, I didn't know anything about it. And I went to a recital and she played me a song. I don't know. We got her a piano. She liked to drive us crazy, beating on that piano. But she turned out to be an excellent piano player. Yeah, in church and whatever, yeah. And Bill, the boy that she married, Bill, he was musically inclined, yes. He could play about anything.
How old are you now?
88. I'll be 89 next month.
And anything that you would change, do different, if you had a chance, opportunity in your life?
Yeah, but good. I made a lot of mistakes in my finances, you know, with the store and stuff. Yes, I would. That was strictly a mistake, but I couldn't control it. Yeah. You know.
What about a bucket list? Is there something that you'd like to do that you've never done?
Like what?
Like travel or something?
I had a camper. We traveled with the family, you know, when they're young, yes.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. We've been all over the country, you know. I enjoy that, going to Myrtle Beach, and you know, when the kids are small. Yeah.
Is there some place you'd like to go or see that you haven't been?
I like the South.
Yeah.
I like Myrtle Beach. You know, we went there. See, my youngest daughter, which, you know, she's retired from the CIA, her and her husband, but they just got through building them a new home right there at Wilmington, North Carolina, between just 30 minutes from Myrtle Beach, I guess, in there. Yeah.
And you mentioned Pam and you mentioned Dan. Who's your other two kids? What's their
Dwayne out here. He lives across the road in front of me. And
your daughter?
And Pamela, she went in the post offices, you know. She done, yeah.
Yeah. And you got the one in in North Carolina?
Yeah, at Kimberly, yeah.
Okay.
She retired, her and her husband retired from the CIA. Yeah. Yeah. They're doing real good, you know.
Red, I sure appreciate you coming by and talking to me. And I didn't realize that you had done most of the work on the construction part, which is a good thing. I like construction people.
Oh, yeah.
Spent most of
I spent, you know, belt lines and, you know, and then the shafts. And, you know, I centered my life mostly on construction, but that's what they used me for, you know.
Yeah.
More so than production, yeah.
Well, I appreciate you coming by and talking to us, and maybe we'll do it again sometime.
Okay. Well, I don't have a good life, but past life is past life, you know. A lot of changes I would make, you know.
Anybody else out there would like to be on the program, you can contact me at awbennett50@gmail.com. And until next time, remember, if you're not dead yet, you're not done yet. And this is Wayne Bennett, and God bless you.
Lord, I'm so tired.